extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Wow, from New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, David Goss, Kalen Carr, back from Frisco. Dave, you were in the promised land.
The sizzle.
Where you were born to sweat, born to wear a branded polo, and born to watch the next generation of soccer superstars in the U.S. and Canada. We'll have more on that in a second. It's the biggest story of the week slash weekend, of course. We have a big show coming today. It's packed. We went through the rundown here before we record.
Wait, real quick. Can I just ask, did you rent – were you driving a convertible down there?
Listen, dude, I didn't rent anything. People just give me things. When you're the voice of youth development in America, people just come and they offer you things. And it's
how's that happen? You show up, you walk into the hotel lobby, and somebody just says, "Hey, Dave." And then throws you the keys.
They say, "Hey, Mr. Goss." They don't say, "Hey, Dave."
Man, dude, when you're operating around youth players now and they call you sir, it's a real whiplash of an experience. And you're like, no, you're good. And they're like, "Thank you, sir." And you're
like, I'm young. I used to be like you.
Yeah.
Hello.
Oh,
yeah.
Man. Big show coming up here. Chris Armas is out in Toronto after 11 MLS games. They lost 7-1 to DC United. Seven different goal scorers for the black and red. It was a rough day. It was a rougher next day for Chris Armas. We'll talk through that, what it means for Toronto, what it means for Armas, and what comes next. Lore.com Field, that was a positive story this weekend. It made its debut in Columbus, but the crew drew, but they did come back from a 2-0 deficit to the Revs. Sporting KC lead the Supporters Shield standings. Charlotte got their manager, reportedly, but Paul Tenorio is reporting it, so it's basically done. If it was Sam, we would have our doubts, but it's Paul, so we feel
Sam,
really confident.
Rumor is Sam's on vacation.
That's
obviously
what he says.
Sam reported that, so it's a rumor.
Yeah, well, he called me. I answered. I said, "Let me call you back," and then he never answered for like a week. So that's where I stand with Sam Stachko right now. We also have our 2222 Player of the Weekend, and a reminder from Produce and Anders. That was Week 11. We're going to talk about Week 11 all throughout this show. Week 12 is like tomorrow, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and then it's Gold Cup. So I did the schedule for ETR for the rest of the year. It is insane starting right now as you mix international soccer into club soccer and the packed midweek schedules that we'll have through the rest of the year. So get ready.
I had my first World Cup qualifying nightmare.
Oh my gosh.
Last night, the first one since 2017. I dreamed that the U.S. were at Costa Rica and Tim Weah was playing left wing and he pulled a hamstring, and then we subbed Landon Donovan on and he drew a penalty kick, but he got hurt while drawing the penalty kick and it wasn't clear who was going to take the penalty. That was my first World Cup qualifying nightmare I've had since Cuba.
Can I tell you, right after you woke up, Landon just did this.
And he's like, "I got this. Nobody on cares. One leg, I got this."
As long as he can kiss every knuckle.
Right.
He can
still see what happens in the video section if you're listening to the podcast. But that's why we're on
need
YouTube.
To go to YouTube and
exactly.
Watch us.
That's why we're on YouTube. And that's probably a good reminder to me to also ask everyone out there, if you enjoy Extra Time, please rate us. Please subscribe. Please tell your friends who like soccer or like MLS. Help grow this little ridiculous community we have where we sit around and talk about every single nook and cranny.
If you love Doyle's nightmare stories.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even realize this was a podcast. I thought this was just therapy. Yeah. It's Tuesday, you know?
No. Doyle, that's once a month with Weeby. We do a therapy episode. Right.
Just wait. My birthday's coming up, so I'll cry then for you guys. Let's see. Gold Cup is coming, and this is another reminder for us. The U.S. national team is arriving in Kansas City, I believe, this morning. We're getting all the shots of guys coming out of Ubers, of, you know, flexing their athleisure wear, et cetera, et cetera. Gold Cup starts July 10th. U.S. plays their first game against either Haiti or Bermuda on July 11th. All three group games for the U.S. are in Kansas City. We're going to have a lot of coverage. You've been tuning in for the Twitter spaces on Doyle's handle before the U.S. national team games as we break down the lineup. We're going to keep doing that for every single U.S. game, I believe for the rest of the year, unless there's a friendly or something that just pops up in a weird spot. But for every single Gold Cup game, we hope all the way to the final, every single World Cup qualifier, we will be there pregame on Twitter spaces. We'll also be there postgame on all MLS channels, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, the app, the site, live postgame reactions. So as you're trying to like dig through exactly what happened, how you feel, how you maybe should feel. We're doing the same thing, except we're live. So if it's late, it might be a Brian Looker special. If it's not, it might be a Brian Looker special. So tune in. We'll have fun with those. And on Thursday, we'll do a full preview of the tournament because, as I said, it starts on Saturday. All right, let's get into it. And let's start with the most important story, which is the winner of our Extra Time Fantasy League. Congrats to Killer Quazes, who put up 84 points in honors of SKC's big win. Fabio was big for him. We'll talk about Fabio more later because that partnership with Kumalo looking pretty good for the Red Bulls. But this is the story of the weekend. It is our Celebrating Soccer Moment of the Weekend presented by Continental Tire. The Crew are home again for a long time now. Lower.com field is there. Crew Stadium, of course, a wonderful home. But this is the cutting edge new home of the Crew. It was beautiful. It was incredible. It gave me serious FOMO. Dave, you and I have been so lucky over the course of the last 5 years or so to be at, I want to say something around like 60% outside of 2021, new stadium openings. We've been to, at least I know I've been to LAFC, I've been to Minnesota, I've been to DC, I've been to almost all of them. And this is one of those moments where you just wish you were there.
Cincinnati? You're not even going to say Cincinnati?
I said not in 2021. Well, that was not a new stadium.
Oh,
that
was not a new stadium. That was a new team.
Yeah, I know.
It was an opener.
The March sticks with you, but it wasn't quite the same.
I didn't read the fine print.
Yeah, the fine print. What was your favorite moment of the weekend? Caitlin, I want to start with you from lower.com field. What did you see? What did you feel? What did you like from this historic day for Crew fans?
Well, I mean, for me, it's been the last couple of weeks because you look at the sort of closing of the original Crew Stadium and the sort of moment of the fans embracing after that one, and then the lead up to this match throughout the week and the excitement around the city. And, you know, even before that, just following along with the players, you know, social media handles, looking at the training facility and the locker room and, you know, the way that this club is just completely transformed. And it's just, you know, there was the sort of procession out to the match and the pageantry was amazing. What's the song they sing leading up to the match?
They call it Help Falling in Love With You.
Yeah, but they call it Wise Men.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that was like a beautiful moment, I feel like. And then they almost scored in like the first minute of the match. And you were thinking, yeah, you're like, wow, okay, this is going to be a dream start. And then, you know, kind of you have to go down. And then you're like, this is a nightmare. And then they climb back. And it was just like, but the fans were there for the ride for it. And I just kept thinking about all the moments that, you know, all the moments that we remember in Columbus for soccer and just sort of looking ahead at the moments that might still be there to come. And I was thinking, of course, could this now be another place again for the U.S. men's national team or the women's national team to come there and have like a, you know, become a fortress as the last one had. And yeah, the design of the stadium, you know, the aerial views, I think when they finally did, when Jossie got that goal and they throw up the pre-4th of July fireworks, you're just like, oh, wow. It's just like start to finish. Just an amazing day.
You don't always feel the atmosphere through the TV, and this was one where you did, right? You felt like you were part of it. You know from now on you're going to want to tune in for a Crew game because it's going to be high energy. It's going to be intense. You could feel the fans really on the field, like right on the edge. It felt like, and that added to the game. I thought back to when Orlando opened up, and it felt like the fans affected the game so much because we hadn't seen the wall before in MLS and all of that. And you could feel that with this Crew game. And it was cool that Dunny did the game. Obviously, a guy who played back in the day at Crew Stadium and has such a connection to the club and the city. And following him on social media going into it, he was so excited, hanging out with Dante Washington and being around Columbus. And so it was cool to have him get to represent that and kind of like show it to the rest of the world.
Yeah, I thought Dunny deserves a special shout out for that because he was kind of the perfect person who's been kind of like, especially on the soccer culture OG side of things, to really sort of usher it forward. And even in the call, he sort of called out the Stern turn, with Jossie turning, which was great. And then, you know, even Dante Washington, like you mentioned, honoring that history, marching to the match. And then Zach Steffen was there of that next iteration of those great Crew teams is, you know, come back. And I think he was on holiday and taking a break from maybe some Miami time to come for the opener, which was really fun to see. So, I mean, all in all, I thought they did everything right. So it was a really fun game to watch.
You have Frankie with the jackhammers, which is a tradition I think is going to take some time for them to figure out. When you give three people a jackhammer who haven't operated a jackhammer before,
we got to get some steel-toed boots happening in that thing because, like, I'm worried somebody's going to take
some
off a
OSHA toe. Training, something like one of those posters. It's like, step one, don't do this on
generally don't give a guy who's had 11 espressos that day a jackhammer and see what happens. Luckily, he was right next to it.
You think he needs espresso? I think that's just Frankie, man. I've done interviews with the man at like 8 in the morning, and I'm just like, you're intimidating me with your energy, dude.
I can promise you this, though. As someone who has a sister who works in construction and a girlfriend who works in events, they make some really stylish steel toe boots now. So you don't have to down your fashion game. You could keep it high, but still stay safe.
And this
you
is like potentially another sleeve sponsor for the crew, right?
Wow.
Yeah, see now you're thinking. This is synergy right here. This is full circle stuff. Like the roof for me at the stadium design is that's the part that jumps out. And it is like the, you know, it's the aerial shots, but it's also as you come around and you feel everything closed in, it just sort of feels like everything angles down on
it's like Westfalen Stadium, right? Yeah. And that's what's cool about it is like the crew have the same colors of Borussia Dortmund. Obviously, Borussia Dortmund's fan culture and specifically the atmosphere in that stadium is legendary. And granted, that's 90,000 people or 80,000 people. And this is, 22, 23? So it's a different scale, but like it looks like that stadium. And so you get that feel. And for as long as MLS has existed, and certainly for as long as sort of the new stadium era has existed, that atmosphere has been one of the best selling points of the league. Like if you're clicking through your ESPN or Fox or whatever, and like I do this with college football, like I'm not a football fan at all, but if it's like an Auburn Alabama game, or if it's, I don't know, Ohio State Michigan, and you see that fan base and you hear it and it comes through the screen, I will stop and I will watch that game. And I think for a lot of casual sports fans or soccer fans who aren't necessarily MLS fans, if you watch that, if you're just, you know, clicking past that, or you're like, oh, you know what, I'm just going to watch the highlights, that intensity and the way that the stadium sort of magnifies it comes through the screen. And I think it creates new fans in a way that very few other things do. And that's not to disrespect Gold Crew Stadium, which of course is legendary. And if you could just pack that up and send it to Boston so the Revs can plop it down somewhere, that would be amazing. But like the difference between this game that we saw this weekend and almost any game I ever saw at you know, historic Crew Stadium, I mean, it's just levels. And it was spectacular to watch.
I love the little corner entry points for the city. We saw that with LAFC, and I think other clubs have done that too with their stadium, but it's really cool to kind of have that panoramic shot and you see glimpses of downtown Columbus and you feel the connection between the club and the city. They had to change a little bit, you know, of course the tailgating was the thing at Crew Stadium. You had just acres of mud on which to have just your best time possible. That's not there anymore because of the location. So they had a march through. They have a bunch of bars there. The one disappointing thing for me, and it's not a disappointing thing because it will come good, is the TIFO was delayed. There was a bunch of news coming into this. They had a ton of rain. A lot of places in the Midwest did. Shout out to Central Time Zone. Of course, Columbus is Eastern Time, so I guess that doesn't completely work. But they had some issues. They're going to do it later. TIFO sweat is on it. Don't worry about that. But it's a wonderful first run through for lower.com field, and I can't wait to see what they do with it. Now, the crew are below the playoff line right now. 2-2 draw wasn't what they wanted, but a comeback game and that feeling as you walk out of adrenaline is probably there. Doyle, you said in the rundown meeting that this is one of the better games you've seen this season. Why is that?
Just the tempo, first of all. Like, both teams were out there trying to, you know, nobody was sitting back here. Nobody was being cagey. Like, both teams had very obvious things that they were going for. If you look at the Revs goals, especially that first one, that was like a 20-22 pass buildup, getting multiple runners in the box. Both fullbacks were forward. Like, this was an extraordinary goal to open that stadium. And that came against the run of play because the crew again, playing at such a high tempo, we're connecting passes everywhere. Darlington Nagbe then in the second half comes out, and you know, we've said this a million times over the years. He'll have 3 or 4 games every season where he looks like a $40 million central midfielder. And in the second half of this game, he looked like a $40 million central midfielder. He was just remarkable in how he took the game over. And Columbus, for the first time all year, I think, looked a lot like the team that we saw in the playoffs. Well, the first time all year in MLS play, because I thought they had a game against Monterey where they looked that good as well. Oh, okay. They're going to be fine. I don't care that they dropped below the playoff line, after this draw. Like, the fact that they came back from 2-0 down against the Revs, the fact that they played the way they did in spite of missing some big pieces, if they can bottle this, even 80% of it, and take it with them for, most of the rest of the year, this is a top 4 or 5 team in the Eastern Conference. And that Eastern Conference, I think people are starting to realize, this is pretty stacked.
So Jesse Zardes gets the opening goal at Laura.com Field, which is fitting, very fitting. The opening crew goal, fair, yeah. Fair. Those Revs goals, I mean, somebody cared about them, but nobody inside Laura.com Field did.
They were.
That's fine. And look, DeJuan Jones is incredible. Like, as a left back, and what Bruce has done with those outside backs and developing them, that's amazing. That's stuff that every MLS team should be looking at when they go into the Super Draft. But the second goal being an insane own goal, felt good and fitting as well. Is that a foul on Jesse Zardes? I mean, it was like bowling. Jesse Zardes is the ball, and Matt Turner and Andrew Farrell are the pins, and they got like deposited in the back of the net.
I thought they could have called it. I'm glad they didn't, because I thought Columbus deserved the. But like, I'm pretty sure if Andrew Farrell's not getting pushed by Jesse Zardes, he clears that ball.
I don't know. Matt Turner cleared the ball straight off Andrew Farrell. I felt like neither of them could figure out who was going to clear it. They're like both running back, which also it's absurd because it's a ball over the top that hits Andrew Farrell in the dome.
That's
he has part. Nothing. He has no idea. And he plays a through ball into his own goal, basically. Like the whole sequence is absurd.
Yeah, that was the best part. That's what made it exciting. But to Doyle's point, Columbus deserved it. Columbus could have been up 3-0 before the Revs even scored. They came out, they played, they attacked. And I thought that this was a deep team and they should be able to get results without every piece, but Diaz has been dangerous, but not as much as he could. Imagine Kevin Molino in that team now, with him now getting back into form. Like, this is a group.
And leaving for the Gold Cup.
Obviously, but it's Trinidad and Tobago, so not for too long.
You got to win today.
True.
You got to win.
And it won't be for too long. This is not a great national team right now. But when he comes back into that group, they're just going to be so much more dangerous. If you have legitimate finisher off that right wing, or you move Santos over, whatever it is, this team looks really good if they can get their fullback play right.
There's a caveat. Yeah, I agree with that. Like, Milton Valenzuela still has not been the same, and Harrison Offal is starting to show his age a little bit.
The DeJuan Jones one, yeah, on the first goal, he doesn't really hesitate. He just beats him on the second step.
Yep. The caveat here with this performance from the crew, this ended a string for the Revs where they played 4 out of 5 on the road. I thought the Revs were pretty gassed. So as soon as they got up 2-0, they kind of stopped playing. They were like, okay, we're just holding on for dear life for the final hour here. And they, like, credit to them for getting the point. Going 2-1-1 on the road in that 4 games. It speaks to how good the Revs are.
They have so many match winners. Like, you can play however you want. They can still win the game because the talent is just there. And that was, like, to this game, the tempo, whatever. However Columbus wants to play this game, the Revs could hang with them and do what they needed to do. And
which is different from what we saw last year in the playoffs, by the way. This Revs team is better than they were 8 months ago, which is, like, that's a pretty high bar, because I thought the Revs were really, really good in the playoffs. But I think it just – to bring it back to the original point, Weeby, I think what made this such a good game is, like, we all agree that these are two teams that have legitimate shots at winning MLS Cup, and they both played like it.
You said you were gassed by the Revs, or the Revs were gassed. Well, Dave was gassed by being around Shawri over the weekend. I knew I needed to bring it back to MLS Next, and I had to do it in the most awkward way possible. I see you raising those eyebrows, Kalen. We'll get to Chris Armas in just a second. Give us the MLS Next lowdown, Dave, before we dive headfirst into the rest of this MLS weekend. Take us on the soccer side. Take us on the culture side. We joked about your convertible and your whip for the weekend, but we didn't get into the substance, man. We didn't get to the meat.
It was awesome. Obviously, GA Cup and the DA got canceled last year. And so you sit down by a field and you just watch 10 games a day for 6 or 7 days, and you're talking soccer with people. So for me, it was awesome to see. And for anyone who doesn't understand, and we had Fred Lipka, I think, on this show, MLS stepped in and replaced the DA, which collapsed because of COVID. And so MLS Next is the premier youth league in the country, and it's not just MLS clubs, it's the top independent clubs as well. And so this was basically the playoffs and the national championships at each age group, U15, 16, 17, and 19. So it was awesome. I got to see some of the best young players in MLS, and I got to see some of the best young players outside of MLS clubs who are youth national team players as well. And a lot of them now with this new relationship, it's really simple for them to come into teams. So CJ Olney, who played for PDA, who they made a championship game, he's going to go to the Philadelphia Union Academy next year out of New Jersey. And that's a symbiotic relationship. They then send players back who maybe aren't ready to be at the MLS Academy level. So it's cool to see all of that happening. San Jose fans should be really excited. There's some good young players in that academy. Orlando fans should be really excited because there's a ton of talent, including right back Alex Freeman, son of Antonio Freeman, former NFL wide receiver.
Oh, wow.
Who, a fullback that will beat anyone on the dribble and apparently already training with the first team. And that's the other part you see here is like you go into a U15 game and they're like, well, this guy trains with the first team. This guy plays USL. This guy trains with the first team. And you look down and they're 14 years old. And so that's that level that we weren't really at a few years ago. And I've come to these tournaments in the past and seen Gio Reyna and Cade Cowell, and Danny Leyva and Jasso Tencio and all these players at that age. And it feels like the younger players are even better now. And a lot of the players around that U15 age group are already close to professional, setups and professional contracts. And it's pretty impressive. So I'm pretty excited for the future. And it sounds like there's going to be more of this going on. So that's pretty exciting.
Give me the champions. For those of the people out there that weren't paying attention, following the coverage of MLSsoccer.com, who won this thing?
Okay, so RSL won the U15 age group. A 13-year-old named Axel Kai had 5 goals and basically just ran around people when he wanted to, and they beat the Philadelphia Union, who were really good. They have a young player named Luke Zielinski who looks like Paxton Aronson looked like 2 years ago when he was this tall and was just burning fools. So I'm a big fan of all that. U16 age group was Weston FC beating Tampa United. So two of the independent groups, and obviously Weston's had a ton of...
Weston's done in South Florida, right?
Yeah, Miami area. And they've had a ton of pros come out. Already after this, the top two players on the team announced that they were going to Orlando City and Inter Miami's academies, I think, separately. So that's kind of how this whole thing works. U17 level... Let's figure out if I can remember at this point. PDA lost to Orlando City, and that was Alex Freeman. Tommy Williams, who's already on a homegrown contract. He's 6'4" at 16 years old.
They just signed him.
Mm-hmm. So he was at this tournament. Some other good young players as well.
Right?
Yeah, 6'4" right center back. Whoa. I interviewed him, and I was like, you might have to sit down because I can't be this short. Much shorter than
somebody get this man a box. We have a milk crate. We need a milk crate for David Goss. Just stand on the hood of your convertible, dude.
And then the last one was Chicago Fire's U19s, which was interesting because a lot of MLS teams don't really push players at the U19 level. Yep. So the 17s is the peak. And you mentioned Charlie Joseph. He's going to be the Revs U17 coach because that's like their premier group, and that's a recruiting pitch to people is come play for Shari. But Chicago used this as a pro setup because they'll move into what will be the second division or, the MLS 2 division next year. And so they use this as a pro setup, the same coaching staff that they'll have next year. And they push these kids at a professional level. And they came out and they balled out. Misael Rodriguez was the Golden Boot winner of the whole tournament. We've seen him for a few years at the youth levels, but he was phenomenal for them. Some other players as well. The mind-blowing part is I interview a lot of these kids straight up, and they're better than MLS players.
No.
Like they're so natural and comfortable already, and you're like, what is happening? So it was pretty cool to see.
PR training as well as obviously the professional pathway going down. MLS Next Cup coverage, MLSsoccer.com. It was an awesome first event for them. Always glad to have Dave here to just guide us through every single thing that we might have seen, wouldn't have seen, couldn't have seen, get us behind the scenes. Chris Armas is the big story in MLS. That was, I think, a Friday news drop, which is, it was Sunday.
I don't know, it happened on Saturday.
It happened at a time that I missed it for like 8 hours, and I just logged into Twitter, and I was like, hold on, wait. I mean, it wasn't surprising. Toronto FC go to DC. They lose 7-1. This is Armas after this loss, before he was relieved of his job. Quote, there has to be a real shift in what goes on, so looking for solutions here. You know, is it formation? Is it a couple of starters? Is it my fault? You can start looking every which way, but something has to give. Something's got to give. And Bill Manning said after they made the decision to let Chris Armas go that he saw the term something had to give and they had to make a decision. This was their decision. 11 matches in MLS for Chris Armas. There were question marks when the hire was made. Certainly there have been question marks from the Toronto FC supporters for a while now. The pressure had been squarely on Chris Armas. His situation was not easy. This was a roster that finished second in Supporter Shield last year and had some additions as well. Jefferson Soteldo being the big one, had some subtractions. Josie Altidore, who we've talked about a ton on this show, not with the team right now, but the results were not there. They are at the very, very bottom of all the standings, the Eastern Conference standings, the Supporter Shield standings. They have 0.45 points per game. They had lost six games in a row. They had one win, eight losses, two draws. Of course, they are in Orlando. They're not in Toronto. I had somebody jump into my DMs and say, hey, when you talk about this, mention that the Blue Jays are going through something similar and have performed. Well, I've made the mention now. What's your reaction, Dave, as our resident Toronto FC whisperer, to this decision at this point in the season, this early in a new coach's tenure, one that had, you have to say, huge advocates and guys that he had known forever in Bill Manning and Ali Curtis? Why was this decision made? Did it have to be made? And what's next?
And Michael Bradley.
Yep, that's a good
point. That's another part of it, and of him coming in. I think the first reaction, it's a waste of time and money just because of where you've put yourself. But the reality of it is, I don't know that the team is good enough right now to get results with him. And so the only thing you have to save this season is, do you just get a new coach bump? And do players feel relieved that the atmosphere has changed? Does this give you an opportunity to get a couple results in, hopefully then go back to Toronto and save the season? And I don't know that that's totally on Chris Armas. I just think that's the situation you've ended up in. And after a 7-1 loss, that's when it's going to get done. I've said on this show multiple times, you mentioned bringing back the whole team from last year, but Pasuelo's barely played this year. We haven't seen a ton of Soteldo, and a lot of guys have gotten a year older. I don't know that the team was good enough and the scenario was easy enough to deal with. In saying that, losing 7-1 to DC United is unacceptable. And so that's kind of where you've reached the breaking point, I think. And there's nothing left, it feels like, for Chris to do and that they'll respond to. So you hope now that, okay, it's on the players. The coach gets let go. And I think we've talked about this with Kalen before. It changes the atmosphere in the group. Maybe you kick on and get a couple results now off pure just like energy. And that can potentially put you in a spot to save your season while they go out and look for the long-term coach. It's a little bit unfortunate. Greg Vanney's left. Robin Fraser had left just before that. Sounds like Tom's been a guy they would have been interested in. Jason Bent, I know, has gone with Greg Vanney to the LA Galaxy. He coached TFC too and was part of Greg Vanney's staff as well. So it felt like there were some names around that they didn't use. And now they're in a situation where we have no idea what direction they can turn it.
It's not going to get easier. Their next games are away to New England, home against Orlando City, which is a home game for Orlando City, home against the Red Bulls. I mean, that's it could get worse, certainly, before it gets better. They need that new coach bump. The interim coach is going to be Javier Perez. He was an assistant with NYCFC for 4 years and has come over with Armas to this job this year.
What does he do? Does anyone have an idea? Like, what do you do?
What I will say is that he was an assistant at NYCFC under both Patrick Vieira and Domi Turin. Both of those guys really emphasized possession, really emphasized using the ball, passing the ball, building out of the back, positional play, especially under Domi. And if you look at that Toronto FC roster, I think it lends itself much more to that than to the sort of, you know, full-on pressing that I think Chris Armas was leaning towards. And that was one of the two reasons that I thought the Armas hire was weird from the start. First, because, like, he hadn't succeeded with the Red Bulls. They had gone, I don't want to say straight downhill, but they had sort of declined year over year over year, both team-wide and individually in his 2.5 years there. And then the second is that, like, Armas's approach, the Red Bull approach, does not work with Toronto's players. And it wasn't just the guys who were there. It was also Soteldo. Like, they spent $8 million, $9 million on a guy who is not known for his defensive work. But if you look at the amount of skill that they have on that roster, basically all over the field, positional play, sort of Greg Vanney approach to having possession and bossing the game, that would seem to be a better fit. Maybe that's what Javier Perez is going to do instantly. Just like, guys, we're going to play a box standard 4-2-3-1. We're going to get everybody in their right spots. We're going to, you know, we'll defend in a high block a little bit, but then we're going to drop into a low block. And then when we get on the ball, we are going to use the ball and we're going to wear the other team down. I think given the amount of talent with Toronto, it is not wild to imagine this team being really, really good at that right off the jump. The flip side is with the way they have defended, there are real concerns. Chris Mavinga is a shell of what he was last year. Omar Gonzalez is a shell of what he was in the spring in that CCL run. None of the fullbacks have been covering themselves in glory. Neither of the goalkeepers have been particularly good. Tactically, you know, aesthetically, check those boxes. Like Javier Perez, he can do all he wants with that. If the team, the individual players aren't going to start defending better, then like it's not going to matter. Because if you look back at those goals, like the first two or three goals were like that was DC imposing themselves upon the game. But the rest of what happened in that game was just individual breakdown after individual breakdown. And like that's been the story of the season.
Kaylin, I want your take, but I'm going to give you these stats first because this is sort of the game in a nutshell. 7-1 gives you the image, you understand. Also, seven different goal scorers for DC. And we're going to dig into DC here in a second as well because they're looking increasingly good. Like they figured out what Hernan Losada wants to do. But duels won in this match, 70 to DC, 44 for Toronto. Tackles won, 22 to DC, 6 for Toronto. What's your take on this entire situation, Kaylin? You know Chris Armas from back in the day. I think we all respect Chris Armas greatly. And Manning said he was a class act on his way in and a class act on his way out. This was a tough situation, and in the end, it was one that just didn't last for him.
Yeah, disappointed, you know, for sure. But I won't sort of hide my admiration for Chris as a guy and a teammate, a longtime teammate and captain of mine when I played. I want to say for him because I feel like that's kind of the way he was sort of like a manager as a player. And I thought he would actually move to managerial a head coach career in MLS earlier because this was sort of around the era where we're seeing a lot of former players going directly into it. And, you know, when I look at his sort of journey overall, I don't want to like relitigate the past too much over the Red Bull issue, but I do think he found success after Jesse left and did a good job carrying that team to the supporter shield in one of the best seasons we've ever seen. And I think it is also fair to question his decision in the playoffs against one of the best teams we've maybe ever seen in MLS against Atlanta United not to press down there and sort of to leave the Red Bull system, and that cost him dearly. But at the same time, I think that also shows his flexibility, that he's not just a pressing manager and is still trying to figure out the way he kind of wants to play as a manager himself. And then when you look at this move up to Toronto, right, you're saying, okay, the next year they lose Tyler Adams, Red Bull don't exactly go out and open up, you know, the bank to try and spend a lot of money. And then that kind of, you know, pandemic and all that, everything that happens, right? So you could see the allure of going to Toronto FC where you're saying, okay, there's a big budget, right? You don't have to worry about that anymore. If that was your qualm in the past, no longer an issue. You want to go get Soteldo? Here's a bunch, you know, boatload of cash. Go get them. Go get your guys. You got this veteran group. You got basically everything you feel like you need to sort of arm yourself to be successful. And yeah, you can make, you know, you can make excuses or complaints around them having to be in Florida and injuries and absences and then the whole drama. And, you know, the hard part for me is like, it was always going to be a very difficult job coming in and taking over for Greg Vanney. I don't care who the manager was, whether it was, you know, a foreign manager, a domestic manager. It's hard to take over a group that's been successful and won championships, maybe getting a little bit older on, has ideas, and trying to implement that is always going to be difficult. And clearly, it didn't take hold. It didn't work. And it got bad to worse to worse to worse, six matches in a row. And yes, I think all the statistics you highlighted in the last one, Andrew, and all those stats are telling. And when I was watching the match, it looked like straight from the beginning. And then where things really get bad is like they start to compound themselves, and it just gets worse and worse and worse and worse. And it looked like, frankly, it looked like the guys kind of gave up.
Yeah.
And that's the sort of the cruel irony of it. Just watching, for me, was a little bit like the other team that he was sort of rumored to be a part of was DC United. And I was looking at it as like the way Losada has been able to come in with like a young, energetic side that's like, it's taken a time maybe for him to find his footing too, but now you're starting to see the fruits of his labor coming to fruition. And for it to happen against this sort of like moneyed, aging Toronto FC side run by Armas, who's sort of trying to get these guys going and create a philosophy and a culture around a new team that kind of doesn't really maybe want to adapt. That was sort of the cruel irony of it all for me, watching this sort of happen against this team and the way it happened with all these young DC United, you know, young emerging stars coming up and getting goal after goal after goal after goal.
And Kevin Prentice is doing TikTok dances 90 seconds in, you know what I mean? Like Griffin Yao is putting the seventh on him and just like in on cloud nine, like making him look silly. I mean,
So I still believe that Armas can be a great manager. I do want to say that. And I just don't think it's just like a player career, like where you find yourself in your managerial career and where that matches really does matter. I don't think we've maybe seen Armas in that sort of in the right setup clearly. And for TFC, I think there's the right time to make the move because look, they may have a chance of coming home in a couple of weeks. There are sort of reports coming out that they might be able to loosen some of these restrictions and get back to Toronto with maybe a limited capacity crowd at BMO Field. There's going to be a little bit of break for this Gold Cup. So then, you know, you get a chance to maybe get a week full of training with this new manager, whoever it is, if they can find someone quickly, or if not, at least get it. Then you're talking about Jozy Altidore. Was his issues with Armas strictly with Armas or primarily with Armas? Is there enough for him to get back into the team or back into training at least? So is there a window forward for them? So I think for Toronto FC, if you're going to make a move 7-1, right, the writing's on the wall at this point, and you know, you're sort of forced into a corner. And it's a bummer on money, but hey, you got to make a move and try and salvage things and get things going on the right track.
So I wanted to add one. I think it would be dangerous for them to hire their next manager this year.
Yeah.
I understand if you find someone that is the dream scenario and it's now or never, but it just feels like, why would you bring someone else in to deal with what will be a terrible year, even if they're good? Like, even if they play well and make the playoffs and make an MLS Cup run, life kind of sucks right now if you're in the situation that TFC's in. And I don't know that you want to bring a coach in to have to deal with that atmosphere as a start. The other thing I wanted to say was, in MLS, I think often I say, saying you don't have good enough players isn't acceptable because of what you see people do. I think Chris has been in a tough situation, but you look at DC and you talk about those young players. He has Ola Camaro and Frederick Briant that he moved to the bench. Hernan Losada did. Weeby feels very strongly about
that. Yeah, just smashed my microphone.
So like Losada has made tough decisions with the roster he was given to try and get more results out of it. And while it sucks what TFC's had to deal with, Wilfred Nancy has been more successful with a team that's stuck in Florida as well that can't go home. So it's the comparisons are hard for Chris right now in terms of when you look around the league and say, yeah, your situation's really bad. And I don't know that you would expect him to have success there, but other guys in parallel situations have had some level of success.
I mean, it's a lot of change for Toronto FC over the course of the last, 8 months or so. Greg Vanney leaving when you thought he might sign an extension. Greg Vanney's many years and many successes and building of a culture and a club that was no longer a laughing stock. And now this hire, I mean, there's a lot of pressure. Going to be pressure on Bill Manning. Going to be pressure on Ollie Curtis. Going to be a lot of pressure on that squad as well. Because as much as Chris Armas took the fall here, Michael Bradley said it in his post game, and he was standing behind Armas, and you know their relationship. But he said, look, this is on us. We are not playing well. We're not doing the job. I am not doing the job. I'm not leading as well as I could. There are a lot of question marks that have to get answered.
He just reiterated all of that like 10 minutes ago
in the press conference. The thing is, this didn't happen like back into the season where you're like, all right, you know, let's get through like 10 games with interim manager and then like figure it out here. They got 23 more games. They're going to miss a bunch of guys in the Gold Cup. And there is a break. But like this is a season, like a gut check character moment for this squad and for probably the entire organization to figure out and try to get back on the right track, because since MLS Cup in 2017, that CCL run, it's been good and it's been bad, right?
I mean, they they had the past 2 years, they finished second in the Supporters Shield race, and they finished, you know, the runners up in MLS Cup. I think most teams would take that over a 2 year span.
Yeah, I'm extending it back to the 3 years where they fell flat on their face after.
No, but. And I agree with you, Doyle, but the year they went to MLS Cup, what, they were a 5 seed? Wasn't they won that early round game, then they went to NYCFC on short rest, and Matarita gave them the win. Not that they didn't play well, and they didn't play hard, but throughout the last 3 months of that season, it wasn't like, this is a great team. And then they were, and Pozuelo turned out to be as good a signing
as you could make. The other big thing that happened in the second half of 2019 was they brought Omar in, and he looked like old Omar. Like, they only lost like one game of their last 15, and it was the game that Omar didn't start. So going into the playoffs, even though their record wasn't great, it felt like a Seattle type of thing where it's like, oh, they kind of sucked the first half of the season, but now they're awesome. Then Josie got hurt, and that obviously lowered their ceiling, and they didn't, you know, they were able to, you know, they got that gift from Matarita against NYCFC, and then they got that gift from everybody on Atlanta to actually make it into MLS Cup. So, but the point is, it has mostly been really, really good, and I still think they have the pieces to end up being really, really good. But they got to start winning games really, really fast.
Bottom of the standings right now. The big news in MLS over the weekend, Chris Armas relieved his duties as Toronto FC manager. We've talked about DC throughout this conversation. Let's just dig in really quick here, too. And we mentioned Kevin Paredes, who's been one of the most impressive young players in the league over the past couple months. Hernando Sada didn't have a – it was a bumpy start. We were on this show a ton, you know, because seemed like the guys were not responding. They were fielding 14-man squads for games. You know, they were going under they're getting the calipers, or I guess more high-tech calipers. They were going under the body scanners, and guys were like, we can't even eat carbs. And they weren't getting results either, which is really what it all comes down to. If you're not getting results, then everything else starts to matter a whole lot more. Well, they're getting results now, and they're climbing the standings. They're up to sixth. 16 points from 12 games. They do have a couple, like a game in hand or two games in hand, depending on the team that's around them. If you look at their last five, it's 3 wins, a draw, and a loss. That loss was in New York City FC. The wins were against Inter Miami again, and Toronto FC. So there are some question marks here, because their wins are against the Fire and then New York City in the first day of
but
the
that-
season.
That's a playoff team. If you beat the teams you're supposed to beat in MLS, you're a playoff team.
Well, the more important thing is not who they're getting the results against. It's that the style, Doyle, and you wrote about this in your column, we should have promoted it, it's must read every time, is starting to matriculate. Like, it's starting to be apparent that they not only know and understand what they're doing, but can execute it at a high level.
Yeah, they're turning it into goals. And it took 70 seconds to turn it into a goal against Toronto FC this weekend. If you go back and you watch that, that was not just high pressing and creating 50-50s. That was high pressing to create turnovers. And then like a very, very nice sequence of play to end up with Paredes getting that open look on the back post from 8 yards. Like, everybody, like, they transition very well. When the ball is turned over on both sides, they transition really, really quickly. And that is, I mean, it looks like Red Bull soccer, you know, it's energy drink football. And that's kind of what Losada was expected to bring. And it's happened quicker than I thought, especially if you look back in, you know, in April and May, it was just demolition derby. That, like, there weren't those quick transitions. It was just like, get stuck in and, you know, hit a pass in the vague direction of where you think an attacker will be, and don't worry about completing it. And it was pretty gross to watch. It is no longer gross to watch. Like, even last week against NYCFC, and it's weird to say this because I think they beat NYCFC in first
game of the season. Yep.
First game of the season, they beat NYCFC playing just god-awful, unwatchable soccer. And then they lost to NYCFC last week. But the loss last week was the first time all year I think somebody has outplayed NYCFC. And they just lost it. I mean, DC just lost that game at the end because NYCFC could bring on a $10 million attacker with pace for days, and he just smoked Donovan Pines and scored a great late goal. And that's the game, right? The game can be cruel. But even in the losses that they've had lately, they have looked like a very, very good team, which is surprising to me because I did not think this team was going to look like a playoff side at any point in 2021. But so far, Losada has been worth the money.
There's been depth too. You look at the way that they played this game, and of course it's a blowout, but like the way they're able to rotate, like Ola Kamara's coming off the bench scoring goals. Russell Knauss is there in the starting lineup, but Moses Nyman's not. Now he comes off the bench. Kevin Prince, Griffin Yao comes in and scores a goal. Paul Areola is back and looking good. Yamil Assad comes in, scores a goal. Andy Nahar looks like a player from 5 years ago, Andy Nahar. Which yeah. I didn't think that would ever happen again.
No, he looked straight washed up last year with LAFC. He was terrible last year, and now he's starting as a right center back in a 3-5-2.
Everyone knew, man. That was his natural position.
Jumping on the ball and like these progressive dribbles and progressive passing out of the back. It is a different style of play than we're seeing from almost anybody in MLS right now. And to your point, Weeby, about Kamara and Assad and, you know, Felipe being on the bench or Moses, like, Losada's rotating. He has grasped really quickly that it's hard to play and win games in 90-degree heat, which is what DC is going to be facing for the next 3 months, if you're not keeping your players fresh. And so far, he seems to be doing that, and it's paying off.
Spitz hit us up and says he really enjoyed, one, your column, Doyle, about the attack, and that he found it interesting that DC beat Armas, and that led to his firing. I think, Dave, you made this point in the pregame or the pre-show meeting that
second
I think it was
year in a row.
Yeah, DC was the one that beat the Red Bulls that led to it. His question for us is, what's DC's biggest need right now in roster building? I think getting Paul Areola back was a huge positive change for them, and I look forward to seeing Areola in the Gold Cup. If you didn't listen to the interview with him that we had recently, that'll give you a lot of insight into what's going on at DC United. Is there one spot quickly?
Yeah, I would say. I mean, every MLS team, but for them, an elite center back, and you've built this thing where it's like, hey, everyone, if you work hard, we're a team, we're a group, we can do better than that. So you kind of have to walk that line where it's not just replacing guys who have played well for you or worked hard. But
do we know the timeline on Steve Birnbaum? Do we have anybody here with Cal soccer connections who maybe knows the inside details on that?
Nope.
Somebody who might be, say, in the Ring of Honor.
Oh, hold on. I do have my Cal soccer throwback.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go.
When Doyle brought up college football teams earlier, I was like, is he going to go there? I don't know if we'll get there.
Probably not going to Berkeley with that one. They had some glorious teams. But no matter what,
that would be the one position that I would say for this team, because they brought in a center forward and Roberto scored in this game. And I think you have I wouldn't put money in there. And I think they have a ton of depth in central midfield. That's interesting. So that would be the one spot that I would say. I also hope that any TFC fan who's based in the US got the TSN feed for this game. Cause if they had to hear the legend, Dave Johnson, say it's in the back of the net seven times. I think that you fell asleep with that just running through your head.
All right, let's keep it rolling here. We're talking about Hernan Losada. He was a guy who started his coaching career and had a lot of success early, but didn't have a long track record. And we talked to him on that on this show. Charlotte reportedly, but not reportedly, because it's Paul Tenorio, have hired their new manager, Miguel Angel Ramirez. A little primer for you, 36-year-old Spanish coach. He recently was at Internacional in Brazil. It was a three-month stint. Brazil's soccer is crazy. He basically said it afterwards, no time to train, super pressure. He lost to a Serie B team, so he got canned, but he finished first in his Copa Lib group, and he was 10-7-4 overall. His big job before that kind of pushed him into the spotlight was Independiente Valle in Ecuador. He was there for 2 years, 19-20. He led the club to a 2019 Copa Sudamerica Sudamericana title, the first international title in that club's history. You might know Moises Caicedo from De Valle, and also Christian Dahomey came from De Valle. But this looks like in the same mold, a guy at the beginning of his coaching career who has some ideas, who's figuring out how to implement them, coming into Charlotte to build from the start with a blank slate. And I think that blank slate was really, or reportedly, very, very attractive to Miguel Angel Ramirez, because he didn't have that Internacional and he realized, hey, that's not going to be where I can progress my ideas. Any thoughts on this, guys? I mean, it seems promising. It seems ambitious.
I think what's really interesting about the club is you look at the brain trust. I'm talking about Charlotte, and you're looking at a GM who was an agent in Europe, yep. Mark Nichols, who's been in the U.S. at the youth level and then threw into MLS for 20 years, and now a coach, European-based, but coming out of South America. And so you have that ability to touch different soccer cultures and have influence in different parts of the world. And I think that's super interesting in building a club. And the other one is just, we saw for Miami, you need to have a coach early.
Yeah.
You can't build a roster and then bring in a coach to just plop them on top and be like, you have a month and a half to put these guys who have never met each other together, and you're going to be competitive as well. So that's just key in terms of timeline and getting this done. And it seems like this is an ambitious and creative hire, which I think is exciting for a new club coming in where we don't really have a clear idea of what they'll be in MLS. And so this starts to set the tone a little bit, saying, yeah, we're not just cookie cutter, that we have ideas of how we can be competitive in this league.
Yeah, that's all I was going to say. It was just trying to have, you know, signing players, having the technical staff without the manager has not worked. And when you look at the way these expansion clubs have been built, when you have the manager come in, he can go down, you know, now you have somebody who's from South America can go down there and talk to the players himself to make these signings, whoever they do go up getting. And then, yeah, I just feel like Charlotte's interesting to me. I feel like they have a lot of potential and we don't quite know which direction they're going to take. We know they have a big, big bank behind them. So it's like, how much do they want to go out into the market and really do it? But now the most important thing for me is they have a lot of time and they have sort of big foundational pieces, at least to make those decisions together.
All right. We'll get more on that, Charlotte supporters out there, as you begin to figure out what this club is going to be, what you want it to be. What do you think? 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. If email is more your thing. I don't know how many Charlotte folks we have. I should probably go look and see how many.
I think Charlotte's always in the like top 10 of ratings whenever I watch like soccer markets on TV and stuff. So
if you're out there, hit us up. All right, let's talk more about week 11. I don't think I said it. I did say it. Week 12 is coming up literally tomorrow. So it's like you're listening to this, but you're looking forward. Sporting Kansas City right now atop the Supporters Shield standings. Anders' thought and feeling was that we hadn't talked about them enough outside of my undying permanent flame love for Daniel Shalloway.
I think that Anders just doesn't listen to anything that doesn't start with Seattle on this show.
Is he even here? He's been quiet in the chat.
I put it in the rundown. I said, and I wrote, currently atop the Supporters Shield standings, and Anders is really his only productive add to the pre-show meeting was that the Sounders have a game in hand. The rest of the time, he said
the fans will reply if we don't mention it.
There's an army of fans.
It's other people who will do that.
Exactly. So Sporting KC atop, they are not atop in points per game, but they go to LA, and I think probably were outplayed by LA without Chicharito.
Oh, God, yeah.
For the first 80 minutes at least, and then Johnny Russell gets a goal off a giveaway from Saldana, and Kyrie Shelton shows Sasha Kleshchen that age isn't just a number.
Leave Sasha out of this.
Yeah, you know what? I love Sasha.
That's what Kyrie did.
I mean, the ball comes out and it's Sasha and Kyrie, and you're like, well, here comes the race.
There was some breakdown. He was not supposed to be the last man. Yes, no. He was supposed to be fronting. He was supposed to be fronting there.
That's the point where just pride tells you, just foul the man. Just like bear hug him and be like, I'm sorry, Kyrie. This isn't going to happen for you. But he runs away from him. It's 2-0 in the end. Sporting Kansas City as a Supporters Shield contender, as a top-tier team. I think we've sort of talked about them as challenging to be in that group, but we're probably at the point where we just need to say they are in the group with the New Englands, with Orlando's, with Seattle. And I think, to me, that's the four. LA is sort of there-ish, but on the outside looking in. Philadelphia and New York City, but haven't been, I don't think, consistent enough to be in that group.
Wait, who? So you said New England, Seattle, KC, and who was the fourth one?
Orlando.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Orlando. That's my four. Where does Kansas City fall in that spectrum for you, Kaylin, a noted Sporting Kansas City fan who's always enjoyed talking about and playing against this club?
Yeah. I'm going to put Philly. Actually, my. Yeah.
Don't even come now and put
Philly. That was
Philly
such
in
a
here.
Good reaction. Yeah, I'm going to ignore that. Move on.
I still like Philadelphia.
I do too, but.
I might put them near that top group as well. But with Sporting, I think Sporting is. I don't know. I think they're just below that group, if you ask me. Like, I still think that there are. They're a tough team to play. I think they're a very tough team to play. I'll always say that. And especially in these types of circumstances, they can just overwhelm teams, especially with their athleticism and just like energy. They can do, you know, we just went through a whole list of how DC was kind of getting goals by committee and everybody had different goals. Well, like this Sporting team for me is not just dependent on one player, right? So you see Shallowy, all respect to Daniel Shallowy, of course, and his MVP candidacy.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
But like he doesn't need to play the role of MVP for this team. He may have a stretch early on the season where he carries a load, but then it might be Johnny Russell. And then Busio chips in with goals. And then Pulido comes back, hopefully, at some point, and he gets goals. And so they've got kind of like this goals by committee, which even if you look at the best Peter Vermees teams, maybe outside of that Dom Dwyer group year or two where he was just, you know, scoring everything, they've kind of done that, where it's either been Sapong or Kamara or Bunbury or whoever it might be, where that's my era, but that's where they were all kind of just one to the next, and then they start getting their outside backs forward, and it just becomes overwhelming. And I still think this Vermees team still kind of has that same identity. They like to get on top of you. They do a good job of keeping the ball, but once they get attack, especially at home, once they get numbers forward and they start going, it can be pretty tough to stop. Now, they still have some issues in the back, and Tim Melia has largely erased a lot of those over the past years. But I can't help but think if Chicharito is playing in this last match, he gets a goal or two, and it's a different game. So
I think that's fair, but you also have to say Ili Fontas and Busio at the six in a week against LAFC and Galaxy conceded one goal. And
yeah, but LAFC and Galaxy card. LAFC is not the same LAFC.
Whoa, no. We don't get to be here and say, no, we still trust LAFC. They're still the best attack.
They scored like nine goals this year.
Week, and then not credit the teams that are able to
Vela didn't
down.
Start that game. Just going to
no
throw
Vela,
there was
and
a red
they got
card
a red card in the 60th minute, yeah. I think.
Mm-hmm.
So understood. And then Galaxy, no Chicharito. But that's the question mark, right? And so in asking where do they stand, every week that they have a strong defensive performance – moves them up the list, because
it's kind of the same conversation we had last year too, where we said it, like just with those asterisks, where it was last year they were at the top of the table, but we said who are they playing against, because regionally it was a lot against the Fire and Cincinnati and clubs like that that were not really challenging.
I don't even know if they were the Fire and Cincinnati, because that would have been outside the conference, but you know what,
it's probably my Dynamo.
I know Fire and Cincinnati fans are like, dang man, we just get dropped in
leave us out of
the conversation.
Hey,
about
Chicago
the worst
Fire
team.
And Cincinnati, both of those teams are on the rise right now.
Exactly. So first book you pull off the shelf, like, who was bad? Cincy and the Fire, that's who. I think that you have to give Peter Vermees credit for trying something different in the back. He was forced to, because Izzy Matt Marina has been hurt. And he was also forced to, because the personnel is the personnel. He was like, okay, Ilya, let's give it a try. Ilya keeps things in front of him. He's really good in possession, dictating out of the back. Fontas is the same, but Fontas had been a huge question mark defensively. He still is at times, I think.
I think Busio is top five in the league in tackles one. I'm not 100% sure about that, because
that's even interesting
that.
Because they brought in Remy Walter and he was supposed to be the starter. And nobody was talking about Felipe Hernandez being a big part of this midfield. And I don't know how much have we seen of Gadi Kinda? He's supposed to be big.
Everyone knows I'm a Felipe Hernandez guy.
Yeah, of course.
Don't disrespect.
You were gone and I jumped on the train. I don't think I told you about that.
Is this your Curacao? Lining up for the Gold Cup?
I give you your due credit. I said, I'm jumping on David Goss's hype train. I'm in, I'm a passenger here.
Hey, as long as you're open about it.
But Roger has taken steps forward too. And Johnny Russell's starting to look a little bit better. And they're also winning games they maybe shouldn't win. Like, this is a game that they maybe shouldn't win. And to go and get it 2-0, that's what Supporter Shield winners do. So what do you think? Do they have a chance at the Shield? What is your of those four teams, and let's just say those four because they're at the top, where would Sporting Kansas City Doyle be for you in Shield likelihood?
In that group.
I'm asking you to rank
in that gang of four. Yeah, I do it by tiers, Wibby. You know that rankings isn't my thing. I just looked at their schedule. I think they got five of their next six or six of their next eight on the road. We'll have a much better idea of where Sporting are in that hierarchy by the end of this little stretch. But this was a very good win for them, getting 3 points on the road at an LAFC or LA Galaxy team is playing the way this team is. Even if it was fortunate, and it was because Chicharito got injured in warmups, this is a very, very good 3 points. Though I do agree, off, you know, what I think David said is that, like, if Chicharito was on the field for this one, he's probably walking out of there with a brace, because the Galaxy, like, this was the best I've seen the Galaxy play in years and years and years. They just don't, they don't have any other goal scorers.
There's not goal. Yeah, I mean, Cabral had some chances, missed them. Grant Sire, same thing, missed them. Ormelia saved them. But this sort of tells you maybe what Toronto FC fans are thinking, looking across the continent at Greg Vanney and the Galaxy jumping out here and doing what they're doing. So a good performance, didn't get the result. Let's go through some statement wins and do them quickly, because we're running out of time. And I do want to get to our 2222 player of the weekend presented by Body Armor. Austin FC, Thursday. We talked about it a little bit leading into it, and where are the goals? How are they going to get the goals? 4-1 winners. They rolled Portland. Cecilio Dominguez is a false nine. Figuring out. Looking good. This is what we were hoping for as final, like the final product after we raved about them for 3 weeks to start the season. Who has a strong take on Austin, their first home win?
Doyle, you can go.
No, you were there. Yeah.
I was just going to say, we talked about it when they came into the stadium of, they weren't far off. I mean, the 8 points in eight games on the road was, they were fairly even with a lot of teams they played. And sometimes atmosphere and moment can get you over that line. And so I'm not saying that it wasn't down to, you know, Fagundes's a play and Gallagher finishing well and Cecilio Dominguez fitting in as a false nine and feeling fairly comfortable there. But I still think there is an element of, they were right there, and everything about Q2 and being home and all these things can be enough to get you over the line a fair amount. And once you get momentum and confidence, it can build on itself.
Yeah, I still need more data on that, though, because remember, this was their third game at home. The first two had been scoreless draws, and Dominguez as a false nine was effective in this one. They still have to find themselves a starting true number nine. The other interesting thing with this
one, you don't think that's the U22 signing. You think that's a long-term play. They should go spin that DP on a nine.
I haven't seen enough of this U22 kid. Maybe they do think he's the right answer. Hopefully, you know, he'll get a shot to prove it, and they can then spend that DP slot elsewhere. But, like, it's not going to be Cecilio Dominguez. Like, if Cecilio Dominguez is their, you know, starting number nine for the rest of the year, then we're going to see more scoreless draws at home than we will see 4-1 wins from this team.
Nashville want to see more scoreless defensive performances. They got one against the Union. This is sort of the reverse of what they've been doing, which is that they went up and held a lead as opposed to going down and having to fight their way back. Up to fourth in the East. Sort of feels like all the, well, I don't know if it was panic. It wasn't Minnesota United level panic to start the season, but it was, maybe that stated ambition that you had to take another step forward isn't going to materialize. Sort of seems like it's materializing right now for Nashville.
I don't know if it's more of a step forward than kind of the same. Like, they just feel really solid.
Oh, I'm not saying taking step forward. I'm saying, like, at least being at your level.
Oh.
And being in the playoffs. Like, I guess that was what I was saying. Of being a playoff team.
They've played 8 of their 11 games at home. And a lot of, like, they have already played
the easiest. Drag them back down.
No, they've played the easiest part of their schedule. Now, if they can do, if they can do what they did this past weekend on the regular, which is not go down early, they will probably be fine. But that's still an if. They've done that, and they've gone up early in one game this year. They've gone down early in, like, most of the rest of their appearances. So we just have this one data point that suggests that they're back to being the solid team that they were in 2020. I need more than that.
Too many draws at home, 4-0 and 4, I believe, at home. Yep. So that's a little too many draws, but you have to say they haven't lost at home. That's a recipe for success. If you look at the teams, we mentioned Sporting Kansas City at home, I think New England, Seattle. If you go through the list, most of the teams that are still haven't lost at home, I think Houston Dynamo actually in that group too. Most of those teams are near or around the top. So that bodes well for them. They do just enough to get goals, right? CJ does a good job here against his former side, which obviously came in with a bunch of energy in this one. And then they're always dangerous on set pieces with Walker Zimmerman kind of throwing himself at the ball. And solid four in the back. Leal is I think, been pretty good. Solid
they
five.
Switched,
yeah, they switched to five.
Yeah,
they brought Marin and go. That gets their outside backs a little bit more advanced. Both pretty good service of the ball in the box. So they're not. They're never going to run up the score on you unless it's against Inter Miami in the playoffs.
Against TFC coming up.
Be
or
solid
no?
always. Yeah.
I don't know, dude. Regular season right now against Inter Miami, you might be running up scores as well.
Or you just win 1-0 and call it a day, like Club de Foot did this weekend. Here's another one for you. Red Bulls 2-1 against Orlando. That's a big win. Nice partnership going between Kamal and Fabio. That looks good. The Red Bulls just, they look good. They look like they understand what hungry young wolves should do. So
the Fabio signing has been good, I think. I mean, he gets the winner in this one, but he's the type where I think early on in the season he was getting assists and you're saying, okay, great, he's a handful, he's around it, but now he's getting a couple goals. I think two of them have been decisive at this point. So he's giving them some like beyond the sort of hungry wolves part. He's the kind of like, he leads the line as far as
he's a sly wolf
crazy outside. But yeah, I think him getting goals will be big. It feels like he has more of them too. I don't think we've seen the best of him yet.
And you were saying he was getting assists. Klamala just looks like a really willing center forward. He wants to set guys up. He wants the help. And so it probably makes Fabio's job easier. And I think it's a good way for Klamala to get into this league. It's hard for goal scorers to like hit the ground running here. I think he can be an effective player while he still finds his feet finishing wise. You want him to get there because of the DP level and all of that. But he's immediately, I think, been a positive factor for the side.
So I think it's, what day is it this week? Because all these games are mixed up. Either way, they're playing the Union, so it's the diamond off between these two teams. So we'll see how that
Thursday.
Goes.
Yeah.
Thursday, yeah.
And I love that. I think Struber in his postgame brought it up, and he goes, I really like how Philly plays. And he goes, oh, shocking.
Yeah, really?
The other Austrian-German-run club that plays high-pressing diamonds.
You're big into that, huh? It's it is. It's Thursday, July 8th. So that's at Red Bull Arena. New York and Philly on MLS.
No Gallese against New York, who, by the way, had a couple of nice saves against Brazil and Neymar. So that was kind of fun.
The bigger thing, though, was they lost Antonio Carlos early. Yeah. And, like, Antonio Carlos has been the defender of the year to this point in MLS, and for me anyway.
I put him on my MVP early vote.
Nice. I had him fifth.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, I absolutely
did. On the list that they published?
No, he
didn't. No.
Were they only two?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, they
I thought you were more
us.
Of an outside back.
Big media weeby down in Kansas City putting together their top 11s, best 11s of MVP.
Oh, no surprise. Chicharito was number one. Yeah. Narrative wins again.
The point I wanted to make out of this one is that, like, everybody in MLS is having to deal with injuries this year and replacing players. And Orlando City have already had to do a good amount of that with both fullbacks, with Janssen missed some time earlier in the year.
Ori missed the Russell, first, like, six.
Center forward, obviously, has been a revolving door. Yep.
And Gallese out. So there's been a lot of it. I think through all of that, having watched this team, you know, a bunch under Oscar Pereja, the closest player they have to irreplaceable is Antonio Carlos. So they, like, watch that Twitter feed or, you know, set your alerts for Orlando City, because how severe that injury is, I think, is significant with regards to how high this team's ceiling is.
You don't have to set alerts. You just go follow Antonio Carlos on Instagram Twitter or whatever. Yeah, he put out the update. He's like, here's the issue. Here's the deal. Here's the time frame. We're always complaining. We're like, why are there not more detailed injury reports? And Antonio Carlos is like, I hear you. I forgot what it is. I think it's an adductor. Nice. It didn't sound super serious, so I just glossed over it.
Isn't adductor bad?
I don't know. Like, everything is, when you get hurt, everything's bad.
Before you guys speculate on random injuries, has anyone had a worse year than Chris Mueller? Like, you look at the Gold Cup roster and the hole at that position and where he was coming into the year.
I jumped in on an Oscar Pereja media call maybe last week, and there was a bunch of talk about Mueller. And he was saying that he thinks that he's not getting a fair shake, basically publicly, that no, the goals aren't there, but that the assists
are. He's not even starting, though, for Orlando consistently. How can you call him to the national team if Oscar's not starting him?
Yeah, that's a good question, because Oscar stood behind him. I don't know. He refutes that, but it's definitely not the Mueller that we were seeing and start talking MVP last year.
He did score a goal in this
week. Yeah, he did. Yeah, it was big.
He's got two goals and four assists in 666 minutes. He started 7 of the 11 games.
So since Vanderwater has basically scored, he's been a 50-50 starter. But Vanderwater wasn't there at the start of the year where Mueller was the starter. So
yeah. But like, squad rotation is going to be a big thing this year. And he has either a goal or an assist in each of the last four games, which is might coincide with when Greg Berhalter informed him that he wasn't going to make the Gold Cup roster.
So. Real quick, because we got to get to this 2222 player of the weekend, but I can't help myself here because Asani Dotson got engaged after a game on the field. It was a draw, Kalen. 2-2, Minnesota, San Jose. What is, in your mind...
Am I the resident? I'm not engaged, by the way.
Yeah, but you've been in locker rooms.
This should be something you should answer. Why are you... me on this.
Okay, that's fine. I would.
Would you have done this?
You've got it planned. If you lost, you don't do it. If you lose at home, I don't think you can do it.
I mean, it almost was a loss for. I mean, the way it felt like a loss for.
I mean,
Minnesota.
think about how Asani was feeling in that moment. He's like, I got the ring burning a hole in my pocket. If we lose this thing, I mean, she expects it. Clearly, it's not a surprise. She's coming down to the field. She's like, if you saw the video, she's dressed for the occasion. She's wearing all white. Well. She knows.
Yeah,
she knows what's up here. These things aren't surprises. Yeah, if you lose, you can't do it.
I don't know. She looked kind of surprised.
It's probably more of a surprise for other couples if they don't already have a child together. It's probably a bit more of a curveball.
Well, I still waited like a year and a half, so you know, there was mystery. You had to make sure, you have to get the confirmation. Young Hassani is out here on the field doing his thing. I appreciate it. Congratulations to him.
I do like that he waited for the home game against San Jose because Minnesota usually just smoke San Jose. Usually they just.
He's just checking the schedule. He's like, I see a 5-0 loss recently. I think they're on
that. He came in 5 weeks ago. He goes, yo, Brent, you're going to do your thing, right? I'll pick San Jose then.
Well, but that's the thing. So,
he had home games coming up. Sounders are the next home game. Couldn't do that. Timbers are the next home game after that. Not real safe on that one. And then you got the Dynamo in August. Yeah. So, I mean, he had to pull the trigger. He had to get
usually
this
the way Minnesota smokes San Jose is by Boxall getting on the ball. And because like San Jose's man marking always leaves someone free, one of the center backs free. And Boxall lives for this. And he looks like Franz Beckenbauer every time he gets to play against San Jose. But, of course, he got hurt early and that kind of changed the whole game. Sorry for talking about soccer. Let's go.
That's
back
fine. Cade Cal got a goal in this one, so that's good. And that leads us into our new favorite segment. It's always been our favorite segment. Who are we kidding? It's the 22 under 22 player of the weekend presented by Body Armor. And our player of the weekend by unanimous decision of me is Ricardo Pepi of FC Dallas.
Mexican national team.
Whoa, maybe. The sleuths out there on social media used to have what? USMNT in his Instagram profile, and now it's USMNT and FMF. So watch out. Get the tongues wagging now. The other news with FC Dallas, though he didn't play, is Tanner Tessman headed to Serie A. To anybody want to help me out here? To
Venezia. The team in
Venezia, the team in Venice.
Venezia.
Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate that. American recently promoted.
American ownership group, as you said, recently promoted a cute little stadium on the island of Venice, about like 9,000
people. I thought it was
holds.
Seven.
Yeah, it's small.
It's like tiny, yeah.
Either way, he's not the player of the weekend, but that's big news. Yeah. Let's jump on the Ricardo Pepi hype train.
So second straight week starting, 3 goals in a week for him, and they get 4 points out of those results as well. He's brought something to the center forward position they didn't have, athleticism, ability to cover ground.
Putting the ball in the freaking net is what
And then he's added
have.
To that is the goal scoring thing, which is
Franco
awesome.
Hara has one non-penalty goal in like his last 24 appearances. What Ricardo Pepi has brought to the team at center forward is the ability to actually score goals.
And it's awesome. And some of the goals have been filthy as well, including the one against the Revs where he megged a guy and then went 40 yards. And Lucci said it's his spot to lose right now. So he's continuing to win it, which is huge for Dallas. And it's awesome to see him move on. I've been in the camp for 2.5 years that he's the future of the US 9 pool. And we've been kicking around waiting for someone. So I really hope that this run of form coincides with call-ups to the US men's. Actually, not as like a let's cap time, as like a, no one has played well at the 9 position. And he's playing well. Now, unfortunately, he wasn't getting the starts at the beginning of the year, I think, to line up with this Gold Cup call-up. but you'd hope after this he'd be someone who would get pulled into some camps and looked at. Either way, he's playing awesome, and he's probably the future, the next big sale for FC Dallas.
Yeah, we talked about this, Weeby, before, and we said for young players, you need to see that consistency where it's 1 week to the next week. How do you continue to build on that? And he's doing that. And yes, the goals are by far and away the most important thing, and he's been able to score them in a multitude of ways. Right foot, left foot, getting in behind. Here you see the cross from Ferreira where he gets the header on frame. And that's the thing I like about him too. It's most, I think he has maybe 10, I don't think he only has like 10 or 12 shots on the season. I think he's putting in like over 75% of them on frame, like shots on target. He's hitting the frame. And that is, for a young striker, a really good sign going forward, because then you give yourself a chance to be able to get goals, whether it's a deflection, whether it's not. And then the other part is he's added other parts to his game. He's working back defensively. He can play in link-up play. He's being able to play the ball on, he fights, he scraps, he's giving some personality to the team. So he doesn't look like a young kid right now, and he is, which is a really good sign for Dallas going forward.
So we've complained some about the national team center forward and, you know, lack of production at times, or who's going to seize that role, who's there, is it DK, is it Sargent, is it Zardes, is it somebody else, Pifok or, you know, Hoppy or Giacchini, who we're seeing now in the Gold Cup. Where would he be on the U.S. national team depth chart right now?
What do you mean, where would he be? He is on the U.S. national team.
Okay, that's fine, that's fine. But apparently he's also on the Mexican one, too.
Okay, so you can be on two.
No, I'm not saying you can't.
It's not hypothetical.
I'm just saying he's probably higher on the Mexican one right now than he is on the U.S. one. No?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. So you understand why he might be out here. I'm actually considering his options.
I'm adjusting my depth chart in real time as we speak through this. Nice. I just had to remove Io Akinola. But no, I think, look, it's no secret that Mexico's youth pipeline has dried up a little bit in recent years. They just haven't been producing top level talents. And while there are some concerns about the U.S. number nine chart, like Josh Sargent is still a starter in the Bundesliga. He's 21 years old. Daryl Dike, we all expect to make a big move overseas. He's 21 years old. Jordi Pifok is, you know, 24 or 25, and he just had a very good year in Switzerland, which is a, you know, pretty decent level. Matthew Hoppe is going to be starting every game as a number nine for Schalke, in, granted, the two Bundesliga, but like that's a legit league. That is a good collection of talent. So if you're Ricardo Pepi and you're looking at that, and then you're looking at Mexico's depth chart, which is almost all guys who are 30 years and over, other than JJ Macias, who I don't think is great.
He just transferred though, didn't he?
Spain. Yeah, to Getafe.
Yep.
Look, I hope he stays with the U.S. I really do. I wouldn't be shocked if he didn't. I don't think he's going to make the decision anytime soon, but I would expect to see him take camps with both teams.
This is really good for FC Dallas either way. Yeah. It might actually be better for FC Dallas if he goes with Mexico for a number of reasons. If you look at where Pepe's from, El Paso, you're trying to convince players coming from that sort of region right next to the border, have experience playing in Mexico or wanting to come into the club, come to FC Dallas. You can go play for the Mexican national team. You're the number nine for Mexico now. That's a pretty good bargaining chip for them as far as continuing that pipeline of young talent coming through FC Dallas. So they can sit back and say, make whatever decision you want to make, because either way, this is going to work out well for us.
For anyone, we're having these conversations, where does MLS and Liga MX sit and the region and supremacy and all this stuff. If the starting number nine for El Tri for the next whatever years came out of the FC Dallas Academy, I think that changes the formula for how we see the game in this region.
David, is it your dream to see the starting number nine for Canada be Io Akinola, and the starting number nine for Guatemala be Rubio Rubin, and the starting number nine for El Tri to be Ricardo Pepi, and then
Costa Rica is Ariel Lassiter.
There you go. So it's just like MLS spreading its wings.
USL. All
USL.
USL 2 players. LA Galaxy next. 2.
USL yeah, MLS League next, 1, baby. Bro. League 1. There's yeah. not
isn't,
even like
isn't
a championship.
Augie Williams, doesn't, isn't Augustine Williams the Los Dos kid? Isn't he, is he Jamaican?
Oh, I don't know about that.
Yeah. Oh,
wow. I thought you were the expert.
Wow. Sorry. Wow. By the way, this is, it might be the right back for L3 too. Jun Araujo, of course, the Gold Cup decided, hey, maybe it's a little soon here to get cap tied. Let's just pump the brakes a little bit. News today, he signed a contract extension with the Galaxy 4.5 years. So that's big time. I think he's going to be a U22 player for them under that new initiative. The other 2222 player of the week we have to throw out here because Fire fans, look, you don't get that many good things these days. Ignacio Aliceta. Wow. MLS Player of the Week, baby. 2 goals, 3-0 win against Atlanta United. Let's go. And we have a question about the demise of Atlanta United from ATL fans that we will address at a later date because we don't have time. Let's get to the mailbag. 41206.
By the way, Augustine Williams, Sierra Leone, which is
there. Oh, totally even. Different. Even. Yeah, I mean, yeah. That's so we have to send the starting forward to the. We'll have two MLSers as the starting nines for AFCON. They have Kai yeah. and him. It's perfect. We're doing it all.
Pull Mike LaHoud out of retirement. Let's just.
Yes, let's squad. Go.
Mailbag time. 401206 yeah. MLS. XJMNLSoccer.com.
So, first email is from Parts Unknown, and they said this. Quote, Andrew from blank quote is getting old. If you want to talk about something, just bring it up. It feels like you're starting a mailbag segment wow. and then it's just you.
You know when I make it up. I mean, it's like Andrew from Brooklyn Andrew... and then I'm winking at the camera or it's like Andrew from Kansas City. Well, and I'm like, that's actually me.
I don't know if you've heard, but it's a podcast. So the winking probably doesn't help that
yeah,
much.
But I just said it. So now
but we've gotten a bunch of Andrews from KC recently and that's not
well,
you.
Well, that just tells you that Andrew was a popular name. In these in these flatlands back
so
in the day.
So you are promising the listeners
always,
that has not
they
been
are made. Legitimate mail.
Okay.
You will know when I seed the mailbag with my own stuff. You'll know. All right, okay. give us a last one. What's the other best here?
Let's go Colt from Kansas.
Oh my god.
Just to follow it up. I was
that,
listening
now
to
that sounds faker
season,
than Andrew from Kansas. I'm not going
to
lie.
Well, Colt the email Kansas? Sounds just as fake as well. I was listening to your early season MVP rankings just now. I can't disagree with Heal and Chicharito. Obvious choices, but I don't think Shallowy got enough love. It's great to hear him in that combo at distant fifth, but the man has goals that are responsible for 11 points and assists worth 4 points to this KC team. That's absolute MVP caliber production so far this season. In my mind, I didn't crunch the numbers for Chicharito and Heal, though I'm sure they're right up there, but I think Shallowy is clear of Nani and Rui Diaz so far. I'm obviously hoping he can maintain some of that throughout the year. I am glad Weeby is still Queen Bee of the Shallowy Hive.
See, you know, I didn't write this because I wouldn't call myself the Queen Bee of the Shallowy Hive, though I clearly am that at this point. Yeah, that's it from us. Let's get out of here. We will see you on Thursday, everybody. We're going to talk Gold Cup, talk about all these midweek games as well. It's going to be an insane rest of 2021. Stick with us here as we go through it and provide you coverage. And hit us with some more mail. Doyle, by the way, you and I, if people listen this long, they're going to want to listen to Twitter Spaces on Wednesday, right?
Yes.
We're going to do a little pre-show because we didn't do the power rankings because of the holidays. So we'll do a pre-show leading you into Wednesday night games and check the Twitter feed for the timing on that one. It will be on my Twitter, @Andrew_Wiebe, WIEBE, signing off for the Queen Bee of the Shallowy Hive. See you on Wednesday, everybody.